Welcome back to the PFRPA podcast. I'm your host, Brian DeMarco, and today I am here with the man, the myth, the legend, Slade Norris. Slade, how are you, brother?
I'm doing very well. That's quite the introduction there. I'll try to live up to it.
You like that? Got to give you props, man. Got to give you props. So before we take off here, why don't you tell everybody about you? Where'd you grow up? Where'd you play college ball? Your time in the league?
I grew up small town in Washington State, Battleground, Washington. Went over to a Catholic high school, Jesuit in Portland. So I kind of claimed both states and then went on to play at Oregon State under Coach Riley. So I had a great up in the Northwest. And then NFL career, one of the try-hard, bounce-around guys. 1 year was three teams, but ended up a four-year career going from the Raiders to Seattle to Jacksonville and Detroit.
So what years were you in the league?
I was there from 9 to 13.
Okay. All right. Youngin.
Yeah.
Youngin.
My body doesn't always feel that way, but yeah.
believe me, brother. I know. But it's funny because we have such a huge swath of genres here. We're talking to Dave Robinson, who played with Vince Lombardi in his first two championship years, to, you know, guys that have retired more recently. So we have this awesome range of stories. I love it.
That's so one great first thing off, about this brotherhood. It spans so far. Oh, you know, we got so many different people in here that are so awesome and doing so many cool things.
And it is such an amazing brotherhood. It is this – what always amazes me is that instant connection that we have. And, you know, we were down in Miami for the Super Bowl and, you know, meeting guys from all different teams, from all different eras. But as soon as you know that each other played, it's this instant bond. You just, it's amazing.
If you've been through an NFL fall camp, even if you were just a camp body, you understand what it's about.
Yeah, totally. Well, especially Camp Coughlin, man. I get to share the horror stories of the first years of Camp Coughlin and living through it.
Oh, right? Gosh. I can't imagine those.
Bro, I finished my first year in 95 when I finished that training camp. Now, you have to imagine. We go up to the Cheese League. We're in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. We're up there. I think it was like 13 weeks. We reported to camp like a week after 4th of July. It was crazy. It was a long time. Yeah. So we're in camp all that time. We have 5 preseason games. So as a rookie, I played in 21 games. It was like 2 college seasons, right? So I just remember going up to the Cheese League. You know, I wasn't real excited about going down south to play. You know, I'm from Michigan State, so used to the cold weather. So the heat scared me a little bit. But when we found out, hey, we're going up to Wisconsin for training camp, it's going to be a little bit cooler. I like that. It's when the Midwest had that freak heat wave back in 95. So it was like 110 in Wisconsin and 95 in Jacksonville. So it was just horrible, man.
That heat and that humidity takes a lot to get used to. Because, man, when I went down to Jacksonville, just trying to acclimate to that my first season down there, it's a whole different ballgame.
That's right. So you were there. So you understand when I tell you it's like breathing pea soup. You know what I mean?
Yeah, outside that stadium. You have to like cut the air and chew it to swallow it.
Oh, and when we first got down there, there were to make things worse, there was an old paper mill right by the stadium. So it was this awful, putrid smell of this burning chemicals and paper mixed with that humidity and 115 degree days.
Right? So you're glad those times are over.
Oh, man. You know, now you just get to tell old man stories now, right?
That's what we're good at now.
That's right. That's right. So Oregon State.
Yes.
Playing for the Beavers. Is that what they are? The Beavers?
We are the Mighty State. Beavers. Yeah.
The Mighty Beavers.
And it's for all the East Coast people. It's Oregon, not Oregon. I just want to go ahead and get that out there. Common misconception.
Right. Oregon. I'm going to say Oregon from now on.
God. Everybody. Oh, Oregon State? No, I don't know where that is.
I have no idea. So when was your last year of college?
Last year in college, season of 2008, and we ended up having a Pac-12 game to lead off the season play, and we lost. We went down to Stanford, and it was like 100-something degrees, record heat, and we went through and lost to Stanford.
Is that when McCaffrey was there?
It was just before him. One of our rookie wide receivers ended the game, tried to dive into the end zone, fumbled it into the end zone, out of the back of the end zone. So Stanford got the ball. Beautiful. And we lost that way. Had we won that game, we would have gone to the Rose Bowl that year.
Oh, how heart-wrenching.
Yes. How my season ended my senior year. We missed it. Missed the Rose Bowl by one game.
Missed it by that much. I have a few of those myself, so I totally feel you. Those are heart-wrenching. So tell me about your draft experience. How did you get to the league? What was your first team?
Mine was a bit different than most. I hear, you know, some of these guys saying how their draft day was, you know, the most stressful thing ever, also the best. But mine, you know, usually you go through, for those that are listening and don't know, you're getting a ton of calls from teams, from your agent saying, you know, hey, we got a pick in this next round. We're really looking at you. We're going to pick you up. And then all of a sudden it comes through and they don't pick you. And then the next one goes and the next one goes. And that's kind of how draft day goes. I always tell one of my buddies, Joey LaRocque, that played with me at Oregon State. He kept getting calls from that. And finally it was like the sixth round and a team called and said, hey, we're getting you this next pick. Well, they picked a long snapper.
Not a long snapper.
That's when he threw his phone and went into his room, locked the door, and ended up having a great career with the Bears. But for mine, my first call was when I got drafted. So I was sitting there. I was expected to go somewhere between the fourth through the seventh round is where I was projected. And fourth round came. It was about 10:15 in the morning. And got a call coming in from a California number, and I answered it, and it was Coach Cable from the Raiders saying that we want you to be a part of the team. And as I'm talking to him, I see myself get up there on the TV, and they're announcing my name, and I had my current girlfriend at the time, a couple buddies, and my family over at my house. Nothing big, but just a close group. And as soon as I got drafted, literally people just started showing up to my parents' house. We didn't put out an invite. We didn't invite anybody over. We ended up having about 100 people show up because everybody was so dang excited. Nice. So it was a fun day for me.
But you know, it's funny you mention that, of guys, their memories. It's the most stressful day, but yet one of the best days. I had one of those too.
Exactly.
So I remember, you know, I was picked to go in the first two rounds, right? And I started getting calls at around 13 and going, okay, they're going to pick you here. And no,
this is gonna happen.
And then we get, it's in about three more in the first round. Then it got to the last pick of the first round. Hey, we're going to take it. And then we pass. So then I start, you know, my young immature self, I just start flipping out and I'm going, all right, I'm going to be that guy that completely falls out of the draft.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm gonna, you know, you always hear that horror story right before you go into it, like if teams projecting you to get, you know, just getting drafted, period. And then you hear of those horror stories of that guy that just falls away. He doesn't get picked up anywhere, not even as a free agent, you know, and he's expected to go get picked pretty high, and it just freaks you out. I think we all have those stories, right?
It's such a crazy emotional day. I mean, with the highs and the lows that you're going through there, and even just, you know, even when once you do get drafted, then all of a sudden the stress comes in of, hey, this is actually happening. It's exciting, but hey, I mean, let's look at the roster. Who do they have? What coach am I going to be with? Is that going to be a good fit for me? Do they, I like the area? I mean, there's so much that goes into that day and finding out where the rest of your future is going.
Hey, well, and you know, in mine in particular, it was so surreal because, you know, before the draft, you know, you're flying all over the place to see teams. I'm going to Kansas City and Cleveland and Oakland, and then to end up getting picked by Jacksonville. So it was one of the teams that I barely talked to. I talked to Coach Coughlin at the combine, and that was about it.
And that's so Jacksonville funny. You say that's exactly how mine was.
And it was even stranger, though. I'll tell you this real quick. It's kind of funny. So, you know, it was the first year of Jacksonville and Carolina coming into the league, right? Uh-huh. So when they threw my picture up on ESPN, they said, okay, Jacksonville selects Brian DeMarco, but they had the Carolina Panthers logo on
no
there.
No way.
I totally screwed it up. I'm like, so I'm looking at the screen going, wait a minute, am I going to Jacksonville or Carolina? I was like, what's the deal? I just talked to Coach Coughlin. But yeah, man, it was fun.
That's a good lesson too. I mean, with all the kids who are getting flown out to interview with these teams, like the Raiders, they flew me out, they talked to me, and then we didn't hear a single thing from them until the call when I got drafted.
Oh, man.
So really, you don't know where you're going to go, no matter how much interest they're showing where the draft board falls. I mean, it's an interesting day.
Well, and you know, you were part of, you know, the draft was a big deal by 95 when I got drafted, but nothing compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
This draft day experience. Matter of fact, my business partner and I were in Nashville last year. And there's over 400,000 people in the streets.
I've heard that Nashville one was awesome. For I went to the Dallas one, but man,
Nashville was production. Yeah, it was incredible. And you just can't this love for the NFL. You know, given all its bumps and bruises, you know, the game is just awesome. Awesome, period. But what it does to, you know, these fans is just it still blows me away.
Yeah.
Right? Just how excited they get and the frenzy. What makes it all exciting, why we get to share these stories, right?
It's fun to see how the sport brings people together of all types.
All types. It's a beautiful thing. If the you know, and I talk about this a lot too, if the world could take some of those lessons that we learned just being on that team of talk about unity and camaraderie and nothing else matters, right? Not race, religion, any of these other things, they just don't matter.
I always say, you know, football has taught me more than anything else that I've ever, you know, taken a part of, whether it's how to, you know, play as a team member, how to work with other people that I may necessarily not like, or I disagree with their life views or anything. But once we step into the workplace, which is our field, it doesn't matter. We all work together at that one common goal, or even beyond that, just to know how to push myself beyond the limits that I think I'm personally capable of. You know, football does so much in those regards that's why I think it's so important we make sure this sport stays around for years to come.
Now, you left me open here for a great transition, and I'm going to have to circle back to your playing days. But I want to touch on what you mentioned and talk about the transition a little bit. One of the things that I can't remember who told me this, but for whatever reason, this stuck in my head when I was done, right? And I had somebody come over and tell me that there were no transferable job skills from the NFL to the real life, to your real life. And it stuck in my head. And I was one of those guys that struggled, you know, just making a transfer. Now, granted, I was really injured, had a lot of issues going on physically. But, man, that thing stuck in my head, that there are no transferable job skills from the NFL to the real world.
Wow.
And for years, that just stuck in me till I obviously you know, got myself mentally just back on track. Mm-hmm. In understanding now today and blessed to be in the position we are from a business standpoint of the success that we've experienced, but what we've implemented were all of these lessons learned on the football field from the time I was 10, 11 years old through being 30 years old. It all came from football.
Yeah.
It's amazing just the value of this game for a young man. It's incredible. Blows me away.
And I think nowadays with the kids that are going through, I think it's needed more than ever. Just the discipline and making a boy a man. I mean, it teaches you so much. And that's hilarious that there's no transferable skills that you learn from football. Yeah. I mean, it's just it can't be more untrue.
It's a complete 180, right? It's the furthest thing from truth. And you know, I have a young son who's playing football as well, and I see, you know, I get a chance to kind of relive a lot of this stuff and see football from a different perspective now as a parent and as a fan. and watching my son transform in this environment and learning how to work hard together with a team too, how to work hard and train hard together, making those sacrifices and pushing yourself beyond what you think your limits are. And that to me is something that just can't be learned anywhere else. And, you know, I love basketball. I love baseball as well. It's just not the same. And I've played all those sports. Yeah. It's just not the same as football. There's something, you know, we always talk about how, you know, your character is revealed through football and through these hardships and the things and the training and the time, et cetera. But I think you're right. I think now more than ever, football is needed for our young men now more than ever. But unfortunately, we have a lot of issues that are scaring a lot of parents. You know, so let's talk about this for a second. Let's talk about the concussion issue. Parents are scared. I literally talk to parents, of course, being a former player, and I'm sure you get this too. Parents coming up to you and saying, hey, would you let your kid play?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and what do you think about the concussion issue? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's not something that can be just swept under the rug anymore. But I also, at the same time, think that it's getting absolutely blown way out of proportion. Because, yes, football is a physical sport, but there are a ton of other sports out there that are just as physical, that are recording concussions and head trauma and all this stuff. So me personally, I think that I like the path that football is taking right now, that it's going to a much more progressive model. It's doing all it can to focus on player safety. And I think we need to continue on that. But to go through and just condemn football like it has been really by the media, I completely disagree with, because there has to be so much more research done. We have to understand, and we throw out the word CTE so easily now. There's so much more to be understood about that before we can go through and make some blanket statement about the sport. And it really hurts me when I'm seeing that there's these, you know, these government institutions and these states that are trying to ban youth football. And we shouldn't be going through and taking the sport away from these kids. What we should be doing is doing all we can to go through and making this sport as safe as it possibly can be.
You know, and you're right on the money. I think we're starting to take those evolutionary steps now. So my personal belief is it's going to happen, and we preserve and protect this game through technology. So you have companies like Physis and Zenith and Shut, these helmet companies that are really putting a lot of emphasis towards R&D and developing a much safer helmet.
Yes.
And coaching is changing a lot. So you can see all the stuff like companies like Atavis and their rugby-style tackling and pulling your head out of things. And, you know, because back in my day especially, you were taught that your head is a weapon. So I like seeing the evolution that's taking place in coaching, the evolution that's taking place in player safety with equipment. And I think that's where the answer is to some degree. Now, however, and this is a perfect segue over to what you're doing now, I think for youth football, and especially in a state like Texas, where youth football... If you're a boy born in the state of Texas, you're just expected that you're going to play football. It's just what you do, right? We live in this land of $90 million high school football stadiums, right? It's amazing to see, and it's still as alive as ever here in the state of Texas. However, what I don't like personally, my personal feelings, I don't like to see these kids out there that are, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, or even up to like 10, that are hitting, that are in these full contact. You know, you have coaches that may have played in high school, or maybe football is just a hobby. You know, they get a few instructional courses maybe along the way. teaching these kids some bad habits at times. It's not all coaches, but you know what I'm getting at here. And I think that's part of the problem. And so let's, in the segue into what you're doing now, I mean, how do we address the issue in your opinion?
So, and you hit the nail on the head, you know, the progression of our sport is only going to be as good as the coach is coaching it. And so the more we can do to teach these coaches out there, because at the youth level, they're all volunteers. They're all dads. And just like you and me, if I were to go through and try to coach a youth football team right now, a tackle football team, I would probably be doing it wrong, because I would go back to the way that I was taught. And that's completely incorrect right now. And that's what a lot of these parents don't realize, is that their husbands who, you know, played some high school ball, maybe played a little college, they were doing, you know, the Oklahoma drill, truck and trailer, bull in the ring. The game has changed so much.
Bull in the ring.
Bull in the ring. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Brings back some memories. Anyways.
No, that's the only that we actually don't remember. But the game has changed so much. And so for our youth, and that's why we're doing kind of what we're doing, which we can talk about. But I think the best approach to changing the game, and you talked about technology and talked about how much progression we're making with the helmets and the equipment we're making. You know, my focus has been completely on how do we make players play in the safest way possible? And if we're going to do that, we need to do that from the first day they step on that field. And if we can get them taught the correct fundamentals from day one, to where they don't even understand what leading with the head means, everything they're doing is taking on a hands-first approach to contact. If we can do that from day one, I think we're going to see a big change in the sport, along with working with the technology that is now being introduced to the game.
Sure, sure. And I can't stress that enough either. It's the early habits that we learn. Mm-hmm. And you know, for any parents out there, listen, I'll share a story that I think they can relate to. My son, I told my son growing up, who's 14 now, I told my son, you're not playing football until you're in seventh grade at least. Yeah. It's just not happening. And, you know, keep in mind, all of his buddies have been playing since kindergarten. And I'm like, there's just no way, it's not happening. Well, he gets to about fifth grade, and the pressure is mounting. So his friends are on him. At this point in time, you know, he's on me. He's like, Dad, I just want to play. I want to play. I can't believe you're stopping me from playing this game with my friends. And then I start to get pressure from parents too.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, look, guys, I'm not letting him play. I was just adamant, you know, he'll have his time. So I break down, okay? He's in fifth grade. Here comes the signups for the local teams. And I break down. I said, okay, here's the deal. I'm gonna let you sign up. And he goes, you're gonna let me sign up. I go, yeah, that doesn't mean you're playing, but I'm gonna let you sign up. I'm going up to this field to talk to your coach. And if it looks anything remotely like Friday night tykes, you're not playing. It's just not happening. And I said, son, here's the bottom line. If you have big football dreams, you know, he dreams of playing in the NFL one day. I said, I'm not unteaching you, you know, years of bad habits that you're going to pick up, right? And, of course, you know, I'm running a new business at the time. I was thinking, I don't have time to coach him every day, right?
Yeah.
So we go up there. I meet the coaches. They end up being really great guys. And somehow, I'm not even sure how this even happened, but somehow the coach asked me if I could help out with the offense and defensive line. Of course, I say yes. And I say, but on occasion, right? Every once in a while, I'll just stop up here and help. Next thing you know, I'm the offensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah.
coaching the team, right? So, you know, I end up getting to spend that time with him, which was awesome. So he was happy and gets to play. And you know, meanwhile, here we are, you know, they wrapped up their eighth grade year. This group of boys he's with has only lost one game since the fifth grade.
Must be all coaching.
You know. Yeah, no. Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. Just a really gifted group of young men, which is awesome. So
that's such a fun bond to share, because I know my dad, my uncles, they coached me up all the way through youth football, and that's something we've always held so special. I played with my cousins on the team. So I shared that experience with you, being able to have that bond.
There was something, it's one of my favorite memories as a dad, you know, and when we won the championship game after a sixth grade year before they go into junior high and it's like railing at school, right? Just remember when the championship game and being able to run out on the field and grab my son, you know what I mean? It was just such a cool thing of living football from a totally different perspective. And to be honest with you, personally, I think it's a lot more fun. I'm not getting beat up. I'm not the one getting hit. I'm not the one getting hit and sweaty and dirty, and it's kind of nice.
My dad always said the same thing. I got him on the field when I was playing the Lions, and so he was in our locker room. He was on the field. He's a chiropractor, and so our team doctor kind of signed him up as like a quote-unquote apprentice for the day, and that was just an awesome experience to have him out there with me.
Oh, it's so cool. So let's it's a perfect transition into what you're doing now. You know, one of the things we talk about on this podcast a lot is transition, and that's something that's actually really near and dear to my heart and important to me. And the transition word is out there a lot in our community.
Yeah.
And just how critically important it is for players to get their mind right and get prepared for this transition and find purpose again. So let's talk a little bit about your transition and about what you're doing now.
Yeah. Once I got done, playing, just like everybody, you know, you're a football player the majority of the life that you know.
Yeah.
And so no matter whether or not you tell yourself, it's not who I am, it's not this, it's not that.
It's what really, I do.
Who you are, you know? It's all people want to talk about. It's how they identify you. And so once you get out and you kind of lose that piece, it's a tough transition for everyone. And so when I got out, I, of course, love the sport. So I got with Oregon State and I did some TV shows, stuff like that. But just really trying to figure out where I fit into this, you know, the real world, this brand new society that I was thrown to.
Right.
So one of my buddies that I played college ball with, Joey LaRock, he had been doing a soft shell shoulder pad company and been working with a lot of the high schools, been working with the flag leagues, and he wanted to open up the southern part of the states, the Texas especially market. So he asked me if I'd go help him do that. And Joey and we were roommates, we were best friends. Anything he asked me to do, I'd be fully on board with. So I said, of course. And I think he talked to me on a Tuesday, and on a Friday, I was driving down to move down to Texas.
Wow.
And so, yeah, nice. it was a quick turnaround there. And we really, we went through, I went to every single high school, 3A and above in Texas from maybe San Antonio North. So I drove around to each and every one talking about this, talking about the way we wanted to play, the utilization of the gear and how we can build this into our practice schedule to take, you know, unnecessary hits to the head out of the weekly practice so we can form these safer players in the weekends, keep them more fresh and all that. And we did really well with that. But our whole goal with getting into what we were doing is we wanted to help progress football, just like all these technology companies, like everybody's trying to do. Yeah. They're trying to make football continue on. And we weren't accomplishing that. You know, the flag leagues we were working with the soft shell helmets, they were continuing to grow. And the high schools, the high school tackle numbers were still dropping, the youth tackle numbers were still dropping. And so at that point we realized, okay, hey, we got to do something different. We got to make a pivot here. And so we sat down and looked at what we thought the issue was, with football. And that is basically, we need to make sure that the base of our funnel, the base of football's funnel, which is our youth programs, are continuing to get kids, and we need to stop this decline. And with that, all of the youth football tackle leagues right now are trying to utilize flag to get kids to at least come out, get into the sport, play football, But the problem is with flag is these kids just simply aren't progressing on to tackle. They're playing flag, and then statistics say usually around the age of 12, they're not playing anymore, and they're not going to tackle. So are they going to a different sport? Are they not going to any other sport altogether? We don't know. But we wanted to introduce a new way to play that would really bridge that gap. Because flag is, I mean, for a first-time player to come in, learn to hold a ball, you know, learn to throw, learn to catch, score a touchdown, have fun. Because, I mean, when you're a young player, that's all you're really trying to do is make sure they enjoy the game and have fun. Flag's a great way to do that. But it doesn't do a lot as far as teaching the real football fundamentals. You know, it's so far and separate from our game. So we went through and developed a new way to play that is as close and as realistic to what real football is. It has all positions, so it actually includes the O-line and D-line.
Yeah, I can't leave the big dudes out.
Exactly. You and I played D-end at Oregon State, so I'm right there with you. But with that, we're able to really take the flag world and the tackle world and all those players who have never been able to play against each other before and now put it all into one game to where the flag players are getting a true experience of the game they love, and they are learning the fundamentals if they do want to take the jump in the future. Then for the tackle players in the offseason, it's a great way for them to further their skills and fundamentals and have fun competing with all their friends with all positions, you know. And so we started a company. It's National Flex Football. You know, flex football is a sport. It's 9-on-9. So, you know, picture a 7-on-7 format, but add in 3 O-linemen, 2 D-linemen. Everything's two-hand touch, but we allow blocking, a run game, blitzing, press coverage, you know, as close to real football as we can get, but still staying no contact at the head, low impact on the body.
So NFX is doing very well. It's growing every time I see it. So tell everybody, like, where you're at now, what states that you're involved with now, and how this is spreading.
It's been crazy. I mean, listing all the states would take a we'll have 27 locations opening this spring, and across the country. We only started this really about a little over 2 years ago now, and so the exponential growth we're seeing is huge, and a lot of it is because the flag players really enjoy it, so we're able to tap into that market, which football hasn't really been able to do before. And then the tackle organizations, they're loving it because now their kids are getting, but they have something for their linemen to do in the offseason, and they have a way to take in these flag players and really give the tackle organizations an opportunity to gain that trust back.
Yeah, and I'll tell everybody out there, if you haven't seen NFX yet, and we'll give you a website here in a minute, but in my opinion, as a former pro player, this is what was needed. This was that missing link in developing the players and protecting the players to help keep this game alive. So I truly believe that NFX is going to be in everybody's backyard here in the not so distant future.
I appreciate it.
So what's the website? Where can they learn more?
Flexfootball.com. It'll give you all the details of the game. It'll give you all the leagues we're running throughout the country. And if you are interested, if you're if you work with a tackle organization, if you're a coach, or if you're just a parent, you know, please shoot us a message. We'd love to talk to you, answer any questions you have. And if we don't have a location near you, we're always willing to go through and work with people to get one opened up. So please reach out to us, and we'll facilitate that communication.
Yeah, and this is, you know what, for me, what excites me about NFX is it goes back to this pure love of the game and the benefits that it brings to young men in particular. It just, it's something that is just needed in our society that you can't find it anywhere else. So congratulations on all the success so far.
Thank you.
You guys are doing an awesome job. Awesome.
It's really warmed my heart because I even listened to your story about how your kid wanted to play tackle football. You didn't want him to yet. You were starting to, you know, have these fights with your child, with even parents trying to pressure you in on this. We talked to so many parents, and a lot of times it's the dad putting pressure on the mom or the kid putting pressure on whoever it is. And now so many people are saying, you know, thank you so much for giving us this middle ground that we can all agree on, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just smart. And like I said, it is the, looking at it from my perspective, it was that next evolutionary step in the game. And we're always, you know, in the back of my mind and working with parents around here, we're thinking about, you know, protecting the players, but also the big picture of preserving and protecting this game that we love. You know, and it's like I said, I think just think it's too important for young men to experience, for sure.
And so, talking to so many hardcore tackle people out there, you know, it's I'm not, because everybody, there's people out there that are saying, "Hey, you're killing tackle football. You're taking kids away from tackle." And you know, I'm one of the biggest supporters of tackle football out there. That's why we developed this, and we really, as proponents of the game, need to realize that if we don't, you know, take a few steps back from tackle and we just keep pushing tackle down people's throat, the decline is going to continue. And so that's really our efforts here is, okay, let's take a few steps away from the real game and let's give these kids an ability to go through and really simplify it, because we don't allow tackling. It's all two-hand touch. Let's make the game a little easier for them to understand, be able to focus on the smaller, finer details of the game. So when they do play tackle for their first time, or when they do go back to tackle for the fall season, they're a much smarter, much better prepared player.
I love it. No perfect ending. No better perfect ending than that. Slade, this was awesome. I really appreciate you hanging out with me today. This has just been fantastic.
Anytime, you know, I always love talking with you, and my beard isn't quite to what yours is yet, but I'm going to keep giving it a shot, man.
You'll get there. You're still young, man. You're still young, right?
Got a lot of
years on you, right? All right, brother. It was great talking with you, man, and we'll talk soon.
That sounds great. You enjoy yourself over there.